Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 327, titled, Were We Controlled? This is being recorded on September 23rd of the year 2001. The title of this program is a direct nod, and under the circumstances, a respectful and affectionate ripoff of, affectionate probably the wrong word, but a respectful and altogether self-conscious ripoff of the title of a very rare book that was published in 1967, dealing with, among other things, the role of mind control and also the factor of stock market manipulation in the assassination of President Kennedy. We're going to get to the substance of that book. The book, again, called Were We Controlled? It was authored by someone who wrote under the name of Lincoln Lawrence. This, however, is apropos of the events surrounding the terrorist blitzkrieg of September 11th of the year 2001. We're going to begin this path of inquiry, and this, like so many of the programs that I've done, is frankly speculative in nature. We're going to be taking a look at some events which appear to have been attendant upon the terrorist blitzkrieg of 9/11/2001, and we're going to ruminate about the apparent manipulation of the capital markets vis-a-vis the terrorist attack, with the apparent manipulation of the capital market that took place with regard to the assassination, or in connection with, I should say, the assassination of President Kennedy. I have stated in some of my ruminations concerning the terrorist attack of September 11th that, in my opinion, and this will come as no surprise to longtime listeners, the executive authority in that attack was what I call the underground Reich, and from an economic standpoint, the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. It would be impossible, given the limitations of time, to do justice to what I mean by both of those, but when I talk about an underground Reich, I mean quite literally a Third Reich that went underground and has perpetuated itself in a political and highly effective fashion, using the enormous wealth that was at its disposal, plus using the putative discipline of the SS, which remained largely intact at the end of World War II, and using the profound connections between the underground Reich, the SS, the intelligence organization of former Gestapo chief Heinrich Müller, and intelligence services of various countries around the world, including and especially the United States. This has permitted the underground Reich to perpetuate itself and to expand its influence in an altogether remarkable and deadly fashion. As I've said before, it is my expectation, it's not something I endorse, but it is my expectation that ultimately the Bormann organization and the underground Reich will prove to be the decisive elements in human affairs on this planet, and I'm afraid that barring a sea change, they will prove the future is going to be theirs. By way of making a point that I have made in the past in connection with Paul Manning's research, a banker familiar with the Bormann organization called it the most important concentration of money power under a single control in world history. The estimate by British intelligence of just the amount of money looted from occupied Europe minus what the Third Reich took from the Soviet Union and Greece was $143 billion, that's B as in billion dollars, and that's in early 1940s dollars. That's not including what they had before, the recapitalization of Germany under the Marshall Plan, and everything that they have earned since, and that is a phenomenal sum of money. It is, quite simply, the greatest concentration of economic power under a single control in world history, and when one combines that consummate power with the deadly expertise of the Heinrich Müller organization, to which, among other institutions, the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit that worked for the CIA and later the Federal Republic of Germany reported, one is dealing with a truly awesome, albeit underground and largely unrecognized, engine of power. And I believe, perhaps incorrectly, that it was that engine of power that was behind the terrorist blitzkrieg of September 11th of 2001. This is an event that many people have quite predictably oversimplified. Some have said that, the views have been predictable. Frankly, elements of the so-called progressive sector have been not only predictable but frankly un-American in their assessment of this, blaming it all on U.S. imperialism and saying that, in effect, we now are kind of getting our just desserts, which is frankly a shocking approach to take. Then you have the right-wing cowboy approach, wanted dead or alive, and this, that, and the other thing. This is not tombstone territory. And then the conspiracy crowd have been saying, well, it was the government that did it. And there is an element of truth to that, but it's not the government that did this, but rather it is an element that is in control of the government. And I think an operational paradigm for people familiar with the intelligence community, with the Iran-Contra scandal, and with the, quote, struggle against terrorism, unquote, that has served as a rubric and a cover for a lot of other things, really as a cover for a lot of other things. The bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, it would be a good operational paradigm in which some elements of U.S. military intelligence, particularly the McKee team, had allegedly come across the connections between the Iran-Contra team and terrorist and weapons trafficker and drug dealer extraordinaire Manzar El-Kassar. And according to at least the insurance investigators' report, their discovery of the connections between Manzar El-Kassar and the Iran-Contra team led ultimately to their destruction on board Pan Am 103. The insurance investigators' report has been roundly disputed, but the point being that there are elements of our own intelligence system which are in bed with the underground Reich and, by extension, with elements such as those that I believe committed the act of September 11th, and there are others that are sincerely opposed to that. With that rumination and a bit of editorialization on my part, let's proceed to the substance of the discussion. I think in many ways the key to the September 11th terrorist blitzkrieg concerns the stock market manipulation, and it is my opinion that in all likelihood, if one follows the tendrils of that manipulation to where they would lead, one would come to the Bormann Group. We're going to begin our analysis, and again, I want to stress that this broadcast is speculative in nature. We're going to begin our analysis with a look at the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, September 18th of 2001. This is an article by Christian Bertelsen of the Chronicle, last name Bertelsen. It's headlined, Airline Stock Deals Under U.S. Probe. It's subtitled, Investors Bet Against United and American. In the days, this article reads in part as follows, in the days leading up to terrorist attacks on America, unknown investors made unusually large bets in the financial markets against the stocks of two companies that would come to be prominently associated with the disaster, United Airlines and American Airlines. The trading in United and other securities is the focus of investigations in several countries, including the United States and Germany, sources say. Investigators are looking into theories that someone with advanced knowledge of the attacks, possibly even financiers of the terrorists themselves, sought to profit from the financial fallout. Using what is known in the options trading industry as a put, investors bet heavily against United's parent, UAL Corporation, on September 6th and 7th, and against American's parent, AMR Corporation, on September 10th in the three trading days before the attack. Skipping into the article, put options are essentially, and I'm turning to the inside page, essentially market methods for profiting when an investor believes the price of a security will drop. No similar bets were made against the stocks of any of the company's major competitors, including Delta, Continental, Northwest, and Southwest. Please note that. Continuing. That would suggest that the investors had specific reason to believe UAL and AMR shares would drop. In addition, the trading ratio in UAL put options on the Thursday before the beginning again. In addition, the trading ratio in UAL put options, UAL put options on the Thursday before the attack was 25 times its normal level, according to data from the Options Clearinghouse Corporations. One more time, since I botched that sentence. In addition, the trading ratio in UAL put options on the Thursday before the attack was 25 times its normal level, according to data from the Options Clearinghouse Corporation. So this would certainly suggest that someone had advanced knowledge of the attack and was taking advantage of that in terms of their behavior in the market. This has been investigated. This unusual market activity is also being investigated by TD Waterhouse of New York. Very quickly, the San Francisco Chronicle business section of Friday, September 21st of 2001 has another article by Christian Bertelsen. This one's headed, Brokers Help Probe. Pre-attack trades look suspicious, and it reads in part as follows. Two online brokerage companies acknowledged yesterday they were cooperating with government investigators regarding unusual trading of securities prior to terrorist attacks on America last week. TD Waterhouse of New York and NFS, a subsidiary of Fidelity of Boston, said they had received inquiries from financial regulators regarding trading of options on AMR Corporation, the parent of American Airlines. And the Chicago Board of Trade has also been scrutinizing these deals. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, September 19th of 2001. Yet another article by Christian Bertelsen. New scrutiny of airlines options deals. This reads in part, the Chicago Board Options Exchange said yesterday that it is looking into an unusual spike in trading in two airline stocks in advance of last week's terrorist attacks. As reported in the Chronicle, options trading in the stocks of the parent companies of American and United Airlines was unusually heavy in the three trading days prior to the attack. A couple of other interesting investment notes in this particular regard. It should be noted that there was a report that eSpeed, the electronic bond trading network controlled by Cantor Fitzgerald, which was an investment firm that was devastated in the attack on the World Trade Center, that there was reported unusual action in its stock as well. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury News of Monday, September 17th of the year 2001, this is an article by Floyd Norris and Edmund L. Andrews of the New York Times. It's headlined, possibly suspicious trading alerts U.S. and German officials. And it's subtitled, heavy short selling found in insurance firms and put options. Skipping down, an American hedge fund manager who spoke on condition of anonymity said he had heard rumors of heavy short selling in eSpeed, the electronic bond trading network controlled by Cantor Fitzgerald, a bond firm that had its offices near the top of One World Trade Center. Shares in eSpeed fell $4.30 on the NASDAQ, or 35%, to $7.95 in unusually heavy volume over the 2 weeks ended September 7th, but recovered to $8.69 last Monday. Obviously, I'm not in a position to comment about the authoritativeness of that rumor that was reported by a trader on condition of anonymity. We are going to take a look at the official, quote, rumor, unquote, concerning the market manipulation on the day that President Kennedy was assassinated in just a minute. The author of the book Were We Controlled, who wrote under the name of Lincoln Lawrence, referred to that allegation as, quote, the rumor, unquote. And again, it is my opinion that one of the major elements in the assassination of President Kennedy, the element behind the collapse of the commodities market the morning President Kennedy was killed, and the author of the September 11th terrorist blitzkrieg on the United States and the market manipulation in connection with that would also be the Underground Reich and the remarkable and deadly Bormann Organization, about which I've spoken so many times, and the element that makes it so deadly, which is the Mueller Intelligence Group associated with that. There also was action in connection with reinsurance companies in Germany. Now, note also that one of the areas in which there appears to have been suspicious activity in the capital markets was in the German market. That, again, significant for reasons we will go into. Skipping down in this article from the Mercury of Monday, September 17th of 2001, in Europe, it was noted that the stocks of large insurance companies, especially reinsurance companies, were very weak in the trading sessions leading up to the attack. Reinsurers provide insurance for insurance companies and are likely to suffer large losses in a disaster. Swiss Reinsurance, Munich Reinsurance, and Allianz were among the big insurance companies to decline before the attack. Carsten Zielke, Z-I-E-L-K-E, an insurance analyst at West LB Panmure in Dusseldorf, Germany, said, quote, if you have terrorists who wanted to take advantage of the market and knew in advance when this damage was going to take place, this is what they would have done, unquote. And in the paper, the San Jose Mercury News from today, for those who hear this program on tape, today being Sunday, September 23rd of 2001, there is yet another article about the suspicious activity in the German capital market before the terrorist blitzkrieg of 9/11. This is an article by William Drozdiak, Drozdiak, of the Washington Post. It's datelined Brussels, Belgium. It's headlined, Suspicious Trading Seen in Attacks, subtitled, Germany Cites Deals That May Have Reaped Profit from Destruction. This article reads in part as follows. The president of Germany's central bank said yesterday that there was mounting evidence that people connected to the attacks in New York and Washington sought to profit from the tragedy by engaging in terrorism insider trading, unquote, on European stock and commodity markets. Ernst Weltecke, head of the Bundesbank, said a preliminary review by German regulators and bank researchers showed there were highly suspicious sales of shares in airlines and insurance companies, along with major trades in gold and oil markets before September 11th that suggest that they were conducted with advanced knowledge of the attacks. Weltecke said his researchers came across what he considers almost irrefutable proof of insider trading as recently as Thursday, but he refused to release any detailed information pending further consultations with regulators in other European countries and the United States. Quote, "What we found makes us sure that people connected to the terrorists must have been trying to profit from this tragedy," unquote, he said at a meeting of European finance ministers and central bankers. Besides massive short-selling of airlines and insurance stocks, Weltecke said, quote, "There was a fundamentally inexplicable rise," unquote, in world oil prices just before the attacks that suggests certain groups or people were buying oil contracts that were then sold for a much higher price. He said German researchers also detected movements in gold markets, quote, "which need explaining," unquote. Obviously, there was considerable speculation about the rise in oil prices. It remains to be seen just what the gathering war clouds do to the price of oil, given the prominent role of the Arab oil-producing countries and given the fact that there has been much apprehension in among the world Islamic community about what the U.S. response to this is likely to be. Also, during times of economic uncertainty and also when the price of oil goes up, the price of gold generally goes up with it. Quote, "If you look at the movements in markets before and after the attacks, it really makes your brow furrow," unquote, Weltecke said. "It is extremely difficult to really verify it, but we are confident we will be able to pinpoint the source in at least one or two cases," unquote. The comments by the central bank chief of Europe's biggest economy were the first public confirmation that regulators were close to proving that groups linked to the U.S. attacks sought to reap windfall gains by exploiting their advanced knowledge through trades in international markets. Weltecke's announcement stunned the finance ministers and central bankers, who met in the eastern Belgian city of Liège this week to discuss plans to introduce the first notes and coins of the euro, Europe's single currency, at the end of the year. Their agenda was dominated instead by economic fallout from the attacks. And I would note that the Chronicle analyzed data released by the New York Stock Exchange. That's the San Francisco Chronicle, of course. And the Chronicle's analysis, and once again the article that I'm about to excerpt is by Christian Bertelsen, one of the economics writers for the Chronicle. The analysis by the Chronicle of the New York Stock Exchange data would indicate that there was, in fact, quite a bit of substance to the inquiry into the speculation on the stocks of the parent companies of United and American Airlines. The San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, September 22nd of the year 2001 has the following story by Christian Bertelsen of the Chronicle, headlined, "Data Shows Heavy Airline Stock Short Selling." And this reads in part, "In another sign that some investors speculated against the stocks of airlines whose jets were used in terrorist attacks on New York and the Pentagon, there was a sharp increase in short selling of the stocks of American and United Airlines during the month before September 11th. The trading activity far outpaced the rise in short selling for all stocks in the New York Stock Exchange or other major airline stocks as a group on the big board, according to a computer analysis by the Chronicle of data released yesterday by the New York Stock Exchange." And I would also point out that although there has been considerable discussion of an airline bailout, a multi-billion dollar airline bailout bill that has been passed by Congress, only the Financial Times of London had a coverage of a particular aspect of the airline business, or stressed a particular aspect of the post 9/11/2001 airline business. Reading now from the Financial Times of Friday, September 21st of the year 2001, this is an article that is headlined, "Airline Chaos Looms as Insurers Cancel War Cover." The airline industry warned yesterday of severe disruption to services from early next week as a result of changes to insurance cover in the wake of last week's terrorist attacks in the U.S. Airlines around the world said insurance underwriters had given them notice they would cancel cover for war liabilities from midnight on Monday. The cancellation means airlines and insurance companies will have to renegotiate the terms of cover in the light of the possibility of U.S. military action in response to the terrorist attacks. Ray Neidel, NEIDL, an airline analyst with ING Bearing, said the new premiums being discussed were, quote, ridiculously high, unquote, and potentially sufficient to tip several already weakened carriers over the brink. Airlines were lobbying Congress to exempt them from liabilities for damage on the ground, he added. This story, by the way, by Ed Crooks, Robert Shrimsley, Michael Peel, Andrew Edgecliffe Johnson, Adrian Michaels, and Kevin Dunn of the Financial Times. That article, again, from September 21st, airline chaos looms as insurers cancel war cover. Now, this apparent speculation in the markets, and again, some of the items that we've looked at, again, there was apparently heavy short selling, please note that tactic, heavy short selling in the parent companies of United Airlines and American Airlines in connection with this event. There was also a rumor that eSpeed, an electronic trading company that is run, based on an electronic trading exchange that is run by Cantor Fitzgerald, which was devastated in the attack on the World Trade Center. There was a story that was going around of unusually heavy selling in the stock of eSpeed. There was a precipitous drop in the stocks of reinsurers in the weeks leading up to the attack. Obviously, the insurance industry is suffering and is, as we saw in that article from the Financial Times, reevaluating its position vis-a-vis the airlines. There was also, apparently, speculation in oil and gold futures, and it's also worth noting that one of the areas, in addition to the New York Stock Exchange and the Chicago Options Exchange, it should also be noted that one of the major areas of action in this were the German capital markets as well. I would also note that as we looked at in For the Record Program 326, much of the networking that this terrorist blitzkrieg was engaging in prior to the attack itself took place in and through Germany. It was from Germany that the funding came for the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, and there are strong evidentiary tributaries running through Germany to major terrorist incidents, such as, obviously, the Oklahoma City bombing, as we've seen in the past, and also the bombing of Pan Am 103. And again, I want to stress that this should not be misinterpreted as being anti-German any more than criticism of U.S. intelligence or criticism of fascist elements in the Islamic community should be interpreted as being anti-American or anti-Islamic. What I'm opposed to is the actions that they take, not the ethnic or religious group to which they belong. And I would stress that the Underground Reich is neither German nor American nor Middle Eastern nor Latin American, but it controls dominant power elements in Germany and in the Middle East and in Latin America and in the United States, but it is underground and largely unrecognized by even some relatively skilled observers of political events. What we're going to be doing during the last part of this broadcast and on the other side of For the Record 327 is taking a look at a remarkable little book that was published in 1967 about the assassination of President Kennedy. This book is titled Were We Controlled? The Assassination of President Kennedy. It was authored by someone who wrote under the name of Lincoln Lawrence. Lincoln Lawrence, as we will see, is a pen name. The actual identity of this person is known only to one or two people. The book was copyrighted in hardcover in 1967 by University Books. It's Library of Congress number 67-15098. And the author of Were We Controlled? Discusses his background and what led him to look into what he calls the rumor. The author, again, Lincoln Lawrence, describes briefly the circumstances leading up to the publication of this book as follows. Next, we came to a rumor that was so hush-hush that it barely surfaced often enough to be grasped. This was one a few old pros in the intelligence field kicked around in high circles, but not very often because it was quite complicated and terribly involved. It was not something you could speculate over while having a cocktail after work. It demanded hours just to comprehend the skeleton of the rumor and was therefore not often passed from one to another. We originally heard of it as the Wall Street Rumor, and we have lived with it so long now that we refer to it simply as the rumor. And that is what it is. Terrifyingly, incredibly, if you will, completely unbelievable. It is, though, a tauntingly alive rumor that we simply could not turn our back on. We devoted almost 3 years to tracking down facts and analyzing them to prove it out or discount it. This book is the result. I'm going to sum up the rumor briefly, and this concerns the alleged putting of Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, who of course assassinated Oswald before he could come to trial, and also a commodity trader named Tino DeAngelis under a form of mind control called RHICEDOM. I'm not going to go into the mind control angle at any length in this broadcast. RHICEDOM is described at considerable length and in detail in RFA number 5 and also in a lecture available from Spitfire about mind control. And the RHIC angle is obviously speculative. I cannot say whether or not Oswald and Ruby were under mind control. I believe certainly Ruby was, quite possibly Oswald. And so I certainly think that the RHICEDOM angle is one that needs to be investigated and may very well have had substance. What is a matter of public record, though, is that the commodities market was collapsed on the morning of November 22, 1963, and that then the assassination of President Kennedy, the news of which came in to the capital markets shortly after lunchtime, further depressed the market, permitting anyone who had basically engaged in short selling to make a tremendous amount of money. And the market manipulation is a matter of public record. Just exactly who wound up doing it does remain to a certain extent a matter of speculation. I obviously believe it was what I call the remarkable and deadly Bormann Organization. We're going to continue with a discussion of the rumor here. In the other side of For the Record program number 327, I have alluded to Spitfire, that's a tape and CD duplication service that stocks the various programs I've produced over the years. Spitfire can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. There is a list of and description of the various programs available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. The Spitfire website is equipped with real audio, and people can evaluate the broadcasts on a weekly basis from that website. I would also note that sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across the street from the world, right across the river, rather, from the World Trade Center, has been compiling the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent broadcasts are available for streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available on a longer URL, also from WFMU. There are links to both WFMU websites in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, and in turn, the WFMU websites have a link to the Spitfire website. Listeners can email me at demory@kfjc.org, and they can also listen to the three-hour program I do from 7 to 10 p.m. on Sunday night Pacific time. Turn to kfjc.org or dial up kfjc.org, look in the Transmissions and Public Affairs section. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 327, being recorded on September 23rd of the year 2001. We're going to continue with our analysis of the rumor and the manipulation of the capital markets in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy in the other side of this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.